Welcome to HWTP Sports Talk with your host, David Weinstein. And now, David Weinstein.
Hello, Huddlin' fans. Thank you for listening to Huddlin' with the Pro Sports Talk with David Weinstein, featuring Pepper Johnson. My co-host Pepper Johnson is a 13-year NFL veteran player, a five-time Super Bowl champion as a player and coach, a member of the Ohio State Varsity O Hall of Fame, and a former defensive coach for the Bills, Jets, and Patriots. So joining us is Jason Brown, a football player, author, and farmer for the people. Jason's written a book called Centered, Trading Your Plans for Life That Matters. He's a Henderson, North Carolina native. Went to undergraduate school at UNC, where he played every position on the offensive line. A fourth round draft pick of the Ravens in 2005. Spent some time there, then went over to the St. Louis Rams in 2009. Played 2 years there. And at the time he became a free agent and signed with the St. Louis Rams, signed a $37.5 million five-year deal, the largest deal for an offensive lineman at the time. But in 2011, Jeff Fisher did him a favor, and Jason received another calling from above, and now he is the proud owner and operator of First Fruit Farms. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
So, Pepper, you know, here's a guy who kept guys like you off of the quarterback, and he decided that perhaps there was something else in life he needed to do, and now he's tending the ground and providing food for a lot of people, both inside and outside of his family.
Something Jason, I know nothing about. Farming, the thumbs are not green.
Well, Jason, I'm willing to bet that with a little bit of time, both me and Pepper could learn a little bit of something about farming, you think?
Oh, yeah, you could definitely. And that's the unique thing about my story is that I knew nothing about farming as well. And so it definitely was a leap of faith. I thought that I was going to be, you know, doing business, you know, carrying around a briefcase, you know, my post-career after football. But yeah, God had different plans.
Nice. And, you know, Jason, some of your story, and it's a very interesting one, and I read through your book. There are some parallels that are similar to a lot of NFL players, and then obviously some that are out of the ordinary. You know, you saw sports as a way to channel your energy, to give you some focus as you were growing up. You had some farming in your background. You grew up in a bit of a turbulent times. Your family suffered, as many families did, from discrimination that's plagued both the South and our country for a very long time. You used football in college to get somewhere. You made a lot of money, and you lost a lot of money, much in the same way that a lot of other players lose a lot of money. Investments that went wrong, you know, and then you reinvested in yourself and in the land. What kind of advice do you have for young football players who are starting off, both at the college level and those guys who are going to get drafted and head into their rookie year coming up in April?
So the thing is that, you know, no one would like to think about, you know, post-career that early on. But the fact is that, guess what? Everybody's football career, you know, you're going to have to move on to the next chapter in your life. You're going to have to move on to your post-career after football. And so the thing is, what does that look like? And are you planning and preparing for that moment, you know, even in your youth, even before, yeah, you're even drafted? And of course, you know, by the graces of God, yes, I listened to my mama, all right? And I made sure I left UNC Chapel Hill with my degree. So that's something that I always have to fall back on. I'm a motivational speaker. I love talking to the youth and inspiring them. And that's one thing that, I thought that I was going to be able to do. And I still do it. But now, through my unique story, I have a little bit more to share and inspire, you know, to the kids. And so the thing is that, you know, it's all about self-discovery and finding, you know, peeling back those layers of an onion, finding out some things about yourself that you didn't know what was there until the opportunity arises and it comes. And then it's like a sink or a swim. And for some of these young pups, guess what? They have no idea what I'm talking about. But fortunately, through planning and preparation, they'll be ready, you know, for their post-career after football. And also, most importantly, I hope that they apply faith as a foundation when they do so. And so for me, I traded out my plans. Yes, as the book says, for a life that matters. And that was truly finding, you know, my purpose and my calling in life. And it had, you know, very little to do with selfishness and financial gain, and really everything to do with helping other people. And yeah.
So Pepper, you know, I see some parallels here with what you're doing now with the kids who you're coaching, and, you know, what Jason's talking about, imparting some wisdom. Jason, as a motivational speaker, you motivate people in a certain way, a little bit differently perhaps, and Pepper is motivating some people, but I see some parallels between the things that the two of you do.
Yeah, I mean, even when he came out of high school, I was in the same situation where my goal was to get a scholarship somewhere. Yours was more educational, and then you stumbled up on sports, but mine was, I played basketball, baseball, and football just to get a scholarship. You know, I was hoping one of them was going to be successful. End up being football, the last sport that I played organized wise. And when I retired, that's why I really thought I was going in that direction too. I got on with Sony, and started, you know, traveling the country just to be a motivational speaker with those guys. It was beneficial for me for a year, but after a while it was like, you know, I needed something else. And then I started flipping houses, and that's where my bad investments, you know, encountered. You know, I made some, I got greedy. Let me just put it that way. Matter of fact, it was in your stomping grounds. It was in North Carolina. It was in Charlotte.
Okay.
This was when Charlotte was just growing. It was supposed to be the next Atlanta and everything. And we were buying a lot of homes for, you know, $8,000, $17,000, and turning them over for $50,000, $70,000. It was, you know, it was easy, but the people that was doing the work, matter of fact, hey, David hit it on the head. I was like you. I was the guy that was financially getting us in the position. But my friends that lived there, one is an electrician and another one is a banker, and they had time to hammer the nails. Then all of a sudden, these guys got promoted. So they couldn't hammer the nails anymore. And we had a lot of property. Boom, boom, boom. And then we got a hold to some bad stuff and start dealing with Waxhall. And so everything fell down.
So Jason, you had a lot to do when you got started. And I got a question for you here. I don't know if you can see the cover of your book here.
That's right.
All right. So we know the little pet that's being held there, but that barn in the back, is that the one that you all had to rebuild when you got the property and had to start somewhere, and that was a place to start? Or is that just a photo op?
Yeah, so that's just a photo op right there. So the actual barn that we have is so much more beautiful than that. And pictures honestly do not do it justice. But if you visit our website, Amazing Graze, G-R-A-Z-E, AmazingGrazeEvents.com, man, you can see pictures of that barn that we started working on then, back in 2013 and over the years, through some TLC and just like you were talking about before, about hammer and nails, man, I've learned how to do more than just farming. I've learned plumbing, electrical, carpentry, a little bit of everything. And so, yeah, I am a jack of all trades, but still a master of none, but I'm getting...
But you're hands-on. You're hands-on. Yeah. That's what I loved about it. I listened to your book. I'm that lazy guy. I did the audio where you was reading to me. So,
hold on, Pepper. Jason, were you actually reading the book?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's actually narrated in my voice. That was pretty cool. Because, not that many audio books are narrated by the actual author. And so, Penguin Random House, they gave me that opportunity because, yes, you can see I have one of those voices. All right.
Yes, you do. And so, Jason, speaking of voices, a lot of what you talk about in your book is the voice that you heard encouraging you to take the next step. And sometimes that step was not the easy step. And it was a step that was a very difficult step and one that sometimes almost sent you in the wrong direction. When people talk to you and people who don't have the same type of faith that you have, hear about your story and hear what you have to say, what is it that you tell them that sort of brings them over to what happened to you and makes them understand why you did this? When, if you encountered somebody on the street and they told you they heard a voice in their head that was telling them to do something, you'd quickly run away from them.
And so it's not just a voice. It's many people in our conscience. All right. We know that we hear that voice sometimes. And of course, if that voice is trying to give us encouragement, it's trying to tell us the right things to do, it's trying to uplift us. It's trying to nurture us and show love towards us. Of course, like, yes, we know that that comes from God. And so me growing up in North Carolina, growing up in the Bible Belt, in church every single Sunday, and it wasn't by choice. My mama, guess what? if you didn't get up and go to church, the Bible Belt, well, guess what? You're going to get that belt. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The other belt.
So you go to church. But the thing is, I didn't take it seriously. I was immature. I was playing church for all of those years throughout my adolescence. And then even into my adulthood, even when I was playing football. And the thing is that everybody is selfish to a certain degree. It's our ego. It's our flesh. And I had my own plans. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I had my own dreams. And the thing is, I'm a control freak. I wanted to be in control. So guess what? Whenever, that voice popped in my head as far as, hey, Jason, hey, you should be, help that person that's broken down on the side of the road. Or guess what? Donate and give this person, some money. And I'm like, yeah, like I'm not doing that. Okay. And honestly, to be quite, quite truthful with you guys, I'm not that great of a person. Okay. I'm really not that great of a person, but it comes to a level of submission and obedience to where you say, okay, I am going to listen to that call from God because God is calling me to do some pretty awesome things. He's calling me to be a better person. He's calling me to share love with our neighbors. Here's my pride and my ego stepping in, is that I'm still the strongest football player to ever come through Carolina's football program. Benching over 500 pounds, squatting close to 850, power cleaning and split jerking close to 420 pounds. And so, that arrogance and that pride, knowing that just about any room I step into, I know I'm the strongest guy in the room. Okay. And, with my degree from UNC Chapel Hill, I know I'm just about the smartest guy. in every room as well. And it was set me up for disaster and destruction because I wanted to be in control. I had the steering wheel, right? But with my life, every road that I was driving down was leading towards disaster and destruction. And so for anyone that knows the Bible and the passage that reads, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and yet lose his soul? And so for me, it was my coming to Jesus moment. Exactly. All right, Jason, are you going to be obedient? Are you going to submit? Are you going to put on humility? And of course, those are words that, you know, most football players, you know, most people in sports, nobody wants to tap out. Nobody wants to submit. No one wants to put on humility. You know, we're supposed to walk around with pride and arrogance, and we're supposed to have some swag, all right? Yeah, that was my coming to Jesus moment, okay? But because Jesus humbled me real quick and said, look, I haven't been blessing you, Jason, with all of these football skills and all of these things just, you know, just for you to be selfish and for you to be living your best life, okay? I haven't been blessing you for those blessings to stop at you. I've been blessing you so that those blessings would flow through you. And so, yeah, man, he was calling me to turn away from that selfishness, to turn away from that fortune and fame and move towards a lifestyle that was much more humbling, a lifestyle that included service, sacrifice, and loving thy neighbor. And exactly what does that look like? And so the thing this is that most of the problems, and not just most of the problems, 100% of the problems that we see out here in the world today can be solved, not with money, okay? Because everybody think they can throw money at problems and problems go away. Guess what? Most of these problems, it's a heart issue. Mm-hmm. And that's what God has called me to do, you know, through First Fruits Farm. And I got to tell you what, walking away from football and listening to his voice, that was the hardest decision I've ever had to make in my life.
You're listening to HWTP Sports Talk with David Weinstein, recognized by our guests and listeners for our no-holds-barred good questions and informed conversation. Don't be shy. Post your questions and comments at hashtag AskHWTP.
It seems it's one that you've made peace with because you went, as you described it in your book, you went from living in, you know, a mega mansion in St. Louis to backbreaking, dirt under your fingers, digging through the grounds and not knowing where the next harvest is coming from in the matter of simply, you know, almost a 2-year period. And you look none the worse the wear for it. And you seem to have accepted it and have, you know, you're content with the decision that you've made. We all talk now, and certainly in the last year to year and a half, about the lemonade that everybody has to keep making from the lemons that we've all been thrown. And you certainly seem to, you know, to have done that. And you're at peace. There are others who were in a similar position who wouldn't have been able to turn it and go from that to where you are and still be content with their decision. I think, you know, Pepper, you probably have known some people mm-hmm. who've, you know, abandoned it and ended up regretting that decision. I certainly know people who have walked away from very profitable careers and don't seem to be at peace with what's going on. There are a couple of very interesting stories in your book, and I don't want to spoil it because I want people to pick it up. But I want to ask you one thing about football first, and then I want to get back to the story. One of the best for me was the man box for a variety of reasons. But do you still hold the discus and shot put records at UNC? Because you weren't just a football player, or did somebody break those?
So that those records, those were my high school records.
High school, yeah.
Not in college. But and so that was pretty unique. And what I did, you know, there, because really, I just went out for the track and field team just to, you know, stay in shape and to run Now, of course, I wasn't a sprinter, all right? But after I practiced with the shot put and discus, I did go over there with the runners, and I did conditioning with them, you know, to make sure I stayed in shape in the off season. See, back then, that they didn't have year-round football and spring practice like all of these programs are having right now. Now, it's crazy because kids, they make it tough and hard on them to be a two-sport athlete, and you definitely can't be a three-sport athlete anymore because now everything is so competitive and so focused that, yeah, they make these kids pick or choose. Look, you pick one sport, all right, and you're going to be practicing doing this year-round.
For the entire length of your career, Pepper was the defensive line coach for the Patriots. And I know you had to have faced him a couple of times, at least while you were with the Ravens in the same conference. And then, you know, maybe on your way through with the Rams. Any memories stick out for you about seeing that guy over yelling at his players on the other sideline?
Let me tell you what. One of my breakout game, the breakout game of my career, and just like the great Michael Jordan, it was my flu game, okay? Because that Sunday morning, I woke up and, man, like body aches and body chills all over me. I had a temperature. I was congested all in my face, and I was in the starting lineup. Okay, so this was 2006. Yeah, y'all had Brady starting. You had Richard Seymour and then Wilford. That's right. And so Seymour. And so this is when I was playing left guard beside my big brother, Jonathan Ogden. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I had to step into that role. And the thing is, guess what? Man, I had no idea how I was going to go out and perform that night. But I prayed, man, I drank some, they had like some chicken broth in the middle of the locker. Yeah. It was so cold. They had like some chicken broth right there. Man, I guzzled down as many cups of that as I possibly could because I was just freezing. And I went out there and I said, all right now, God, I don't know how this is going to work out, but here's what I did. I focused on the fundamentals, all right? And so I said to myself, if I can just keep replacing these hands back in Seymour's chest, if I can just keep doing that, all right? And when I do my run blocking, if I can just get my hands in his breastplate and just stay low. And so literally that whole game, I was just like, the same thing coaches say. I was like, Jason, just focus on the fundamentals. Everything will be all right. Just focus on the fundamentals. And do you know that I had one of the best games of my career? So now you're a coach, and I know you can relate to this. A guy that's right there on the edge that, you know, the rest of the coaching staff, they're like, yeah, he's got some potential, but we don't know how he's going to play and operate under pressure, all right? Look, dude, there's so many great high school kids. There are so many great college kids out there that out of this world talent, out of this world abilities. But when the pressure comes, a lot of times they fold and they crack. All right. You know this as a coach, like, dude, like, what are you going to do? Do you know that all of the coaches, they must have had a meeting and they must have brought my name up in that meeting on that Monday after the game. And I don't know what they said in that meeting, but it must have been good because guess what? Before that, I didn't have a name. But after that game, I had a name. And every single coach, defensive coaches, special team coaches, when they walked past me in the hallway, they was like, hey, Jason.
Yeah.
Hey, good game, man. And I was like, whoa, I was like, really? Like, yeah. I was like, man. And dude, all I could say was, and nobody knew, like none of the coaches and even the training staff, nobody knew that was my flu game. And man, I persevered. And it touched me so much that I pulled it up and I showed my children, you know, that game. And that, look, I was feeling real bad, all right? Yeah. Like, I was feeling horrible, but somehow you get it done.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And you was blocking Seymour, so that you really had a good day, shoot.
Yeah, I was afraid he was going to eat my lunch, and guess what? He can eat somebody's lunch.
Yeah. All right?
But not that game.
Yeah, Seymour, 06, he probably was in like three Pro Bowls. Yeah, because he's yes. 01 guy. So, he's about three or four Pro Bowls legitimate. Like, he's a legitimate guy. So
that's right.
Yeah. But there was always wars against you guys. Against Baltimore, it was – every game was a freaking war. And it's a coin toss on who was going to win. And home field – It didn't matter. It didn't matter. Y'all came and beat us in New England. We beat y'all in Baltimore. It was.
That's right.
I like those games. I love those games. It was, it was knockout. I really love when you talked about your rookie year blocking Ray. That I love that. I love that you just reminded me. I was like, well, you block Ray. You should be able to block Seymour. So that's huge. But that's what, what it is. And that also, that speak volume of yourself, because that was going on more of my day. Mm-hmm. We would talk about this guy's trying to make the team off of blocking me or, trying to block LT. I am kind of mad about you never mentioning LT now. How you going to go to Carolina? How you go to Carolina? You don't mention LT. But anyway, It was, we felt that being, with our defense, we felt that a lot. It was guys trying to make the team, but it was understandable, because of the reputation that we had. So we was prepared for it. We took a different approach than Ray. That guy tried to come and hit you. We you had a sense of that. So you smacked him first. And if any one of us ever did get blocked by a puppy, then everybody kind of clowned that guy, but we all got the puppy. We weren't going to let you get away with that mess.
Oh yeah.
But I like that you openly said that, and that is so Ray that afterwards trying to grab you and giving you that stare down. But I'm quite sure he probably gave you a nod talking to the coaches too afterwards. Hey, this guy hit me, because that Ray is an honest dude.
You're listening to HWTP Sports Talk with David Weinstein, recognized by our guests and listeners for our no-holds-barred good questions and informed conversation. Don't be shy. Post your questions and comments at hashtag AskHWTP.
If you want a name, you got to go up against somebody that's got a name,
yeah.
Right? You got to – it's like that iron sharpens iron. And the thing is, what a lot of people don't know is that, Ray – he was high up in wrestling in the high school championships before he went to Miami. And so this is a funny story. I was set up one day in the locker room. All right. So Chris McAllister, like about every Friday, the guys, they always set up like some wrestling matches and calling people out. And so he was like, come on, fat boy, let's see what you got. And I was like, man, what are you calling fat boy? And so I stepped out there, and all of a sudden, it was a setup. C-Mac stepped out of the way, and Ray Lewis was right there, just staring at him. And I was like, oh, hold on a second. I didn't sign up for that, all right? I was going to go against Ray. And guess what? So I got him, and I started to go down and pin him, right? And I'm like, okay, that's it. I thought it was over. And I was about to get up, but guess what? Someone that knows how to use your body weight against you and shift just like that. And so he's a wrestler. So guess what? He felt my weight shift. And as soon as I shifted and I was about to get up, he was on top of me. When I say so fast, within a split second, he was on top of me and rolled me over and pinned me. And everybody, when I say the locker room just, when I say erupted, yeah. Everybody, like, ooh, and I got up and I wipe my tears away.
hey, but if you're gonna get reversed, you get reversed by Ray Lewis. I think you're all right. You still,
that's right.
You know, you still on the good side. Because that matter of fact, it's funny that you say that. One, you know, just shooting the mess with him. And I asked him, you know, I'm like, what was your strength in wrestling? You know, you're not quick. You had to be all top heavy. You was just bullying people. He was like, no, Pep, I will reverse him. I will reverse him. That you saying that now. He was like, oh, Pep, hey, the guys that I couldn't just get, Ray will get, hey, he said, hey, I'm going to move a lot faster than I said. I know nothing about wrestling. You know, that's when I started clowning. I said, I'm from Detroit, man. They don't allow wrestling in Detroit.
It's all boxing up. It's all boxing up there.
Yeah, exactly. So
Jason, what kind of a year has it been for you as a farmer, living through what we've all had to live through? You know, it's one thing for us to work at home, but it's a whole nother thing for you to work at home. Has this year been as different for you as it's been for the rest of us?
So the crazy thing is that at the beginning of the pandemic, and even right now, things really haven't changed for us much on a farm. And so, you know, we're here on the farm, we're working the farm every single day. And farming is essential. Agriculture is essential. And so we're an essential service. We're not shutting down for anything because people still got to eat. And even with our children and our family, so we homeschooled before, and yeah, we still homeschool right now. So for so many people that when kids first started being sent home and parents were having to learn how to deal with their children all day long and teach their children, man, we received so many phone calls and emails, text messages from family members and friends. And they're like, what do we do? Like, yeah, how do you do this homeschool thing? And we're like, look, just calm down. Like, look, it's all right. It's like, come on now. It's like, these are people's children, you know, that, yeah, they're supposed to have responsibility for, but everyone is like, yeah, we don't know how to deal with our own children. We don't know how to teach our own children. But thankfully, we had already, you know, made that adjustment, you know, years ago. We've been homeschooling since we've been on the farm, you know, back in 2013. We're seasoned veterans when it comes to homeschooling. And so, yeah, man, we were just given so much awesome advice. Like, look, just calm down. Here's some online resources. Look, get yourself a daily planner, get organized, and everything's going to work out. And, you know, you just got to be creative. The same thing with my children earlier today. I mean, so there's so many activities that people can't do with children. But here on a big farm, man, like I took my kids out. We went for a 4-mile hike. All right. I tried to wear them out. But guess what? It was really wearing me out. We were going up over hills, jumping over creeks, you know, having a good time. And I tell people all the time, man, a farm is the best place to raise a family. I can't think of any better place to raise a family. And just like we have our livestock and animals, and we have free range chickens. So I call our children free range children. Yeah. Like, yeah, man, they're eating good food off the land. You know, they're living their best life. Right. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, we're a working family as well. And so my babies, they get up at 5:30 every single morning. We have discipleship and devotion at our table at 6 a.m. That's for an hour. And then we get outside. They do their chores for the next hour, back inside for 8 o'clock breakfast. By 8:30, clean up the kitchen and you start your schoolwork. After that, by the time the early afternoon hits, when they finish with their school, look, we're back to doing chores. Man, my 13-year-old, he's been driving a tractor since he was 7. He's been driving my pickup truck around the farm since he was 8. Dude, hide your keys, because he can do it all. he can do it all. And as far as his maturity and his critical thinking skills and just, you know, just plain old common sense, which for the most part, common sense is dead. Yeah. I would put my 13-year-old son up against any 18, 19, 20-year-old kid out here. as far as like overcoming challenges, adjusting, adapting, you see what I'm saying? And persevering, because man, nothing goes our way out here on a farm. Like we have to deal with so many problems every single day, but it's like, yeah, look, don't hit the panic button. And like, there's so many people that, yeah, you can call, but guess what? You're your first line of defense. And so we work on solving, yeah, 90 to 95% of most problems that we have here on the farm. And it's an awesome quality in our children, because it's given me confidence knowing that when they get older and they're 18 and they move out the house, that man, like they're sharp. Like they know how to critically think. They know how to handle, you know, problems, you know, when they come our way.
You were talking a little bit about self-sustaining and you've got mm-hmm. livestock and you eat what you grow and you eat what you raise. But one of the interesting things about what you do when you farm is that you give away a lot mm-hmm. of your crop, not for profit, but to help others who aren't able to eat.
That's right. And so the farm is called First Fruits Farm because Tay and I, that's my awesome, lovely wife, we made a covenant with God and we said, whatever land you bless us with here in North Carolina, we're going to call it First Fruits Farm. And God, we're going to give your people, our neighbors, the first fruits of whatever it is produced and grown from the land. And here's the thing. After our first harvest, yeah, it was 120,000 pounds of sweet potatoes. And we were going to donate and about a quarter of it and then possibly market and sell the rest. But when we saw the tremendous need from the community, when we saw that so many food banks, soup kitchens, church pantries were depleted, God placed it on our hearts to donate our entire crops, because so many of them were coming back to us saying, hey, like, this is so awesome. You know, do you have any more? And it was a challenge, but we donated our entire first crop. Well, guess what? Subsequently, like the following harvest, 2015, 2016, 2017, that same challenge was placed on our hearts again. And we were obedient and we gave away not just our first fruits, but all fruits. And so then came the challenge. I said, okay, all right. My savings is being depleted. That there's not a lot of, funds, coming in, because farming is not cheap. There's overhead, there's expenses. So I said, something's got to give. And that's when God said, look, I've blessed you with the most beautiful farm. All right. The most beautiful farm, like, use this beautiful farm that I've blessed you with, to be creative, to help raise funds, for the ministry. And that's exactly what we did. So that beautiful barn, that you talked about, we turned it into a venue, and we're able to, have weddings, receptions, reunions in that barn and raise funds for our ministry here at First Fruits Farm. And so it's coming full circle and it's working out. Now that's another role that I never thought that I would be a part of. Okay. It's operating a wedding venue. Okay. But it as I said, you got to grow, you got to adjust, you got to adapt, and you got to overcome. And by the grace of God, everything is working out.
Yeah, I'm looking at some pretty awesome pictures here. While you were talking, I grazed over to Amazing Graze Events, and that's a spectacular venue. I mean, once we get out of this and we're back to what will almost be normal again, it looks like you can really have yourself quite an event out there. That's huge, huge barn and a beautiful background. And those are some really tremendous pictures that are up there. And it's really something. You're using the land not only for producing, but for getting people to come in and to make more out of it. Really making, lemon out of lemonades.
That's right. Yeah.
So Jason, before we go, go ahead and plug away at what you'd like to plug away, and then give us your last thoughts on what we're going to see of Jason Brown 5 years from now.
So thank you very much. So of course, you know, going back to the book, you know, for Centered, one thing that I want people to take away from that book is the leap of faith that, you know, that I took, that transition that literally everybody is going to have to take and make some transitions in their lives. They're going to have to move from one chapter, you know, to the next. But when you do so, do not, you know, make those plans without involving your faith. Do not make those plans without involving God. And one thing that I've learned is that, yes, in Him, there is no failure. And so, yeah, here at First Fruits Farm, not to say that everything has been perfect, everything has been peachy, you know, but we have operated by faith, man. We have fought the good fight of faith. And I tell you what, hindsight being 2020, looking back at everything that I gave up in my NFL football career, let me tell you something where I was really challenged. Jesus told me that, Jason, I've got greater plans in store for you than all of your football career. And I'm like, really, Jesus? I'm like, come on now, like really? And then when he told me a farm, I'm like, dude, like, how is this going to equate with what I did, you know, there and the highest heights of that career? But let me tell you what, I have experienced many Super Bowls right here on this farm. With our beautiful 8 children, man, 5 of those beautiful babies have been born right here on this farm, like miraculous home births. And so, man, not just my Super Bowl moments, but man, I feel like a Hall of Famer, like already. And just the peace and the joy that now that I've moved towards a life of purpose. And man, I wish that everybody, you know, could experience, you know, what I'm feeling right now. And of course, yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be farming, but what it means to step out on faith and to ask God, what would you have me to do with my life? With all the gifts, the talents, the abilities, the blessings, what would you have me to do to make the greatest impact and the difference in the world that we live in? And like I said before, it always goes back to a heart issue. Yes, you know, so solving a lot of the problems that we see around us through love and compassion. And yeah, and I know that's coming from a big, strong guy that used to beat up on the Patriots, all right, all the time. Yeah, and guess what? I still am a big, tough guy, all right? But man, I've got an awesome, you know, soft spot in my heart when it comes to giving back and loving thy neighbor. And that's truly what it's all about. And at the end of the day, that's what I want my legacy to be about as well. And that's helping and serving others.
Well, yeah. Thanks again for joining us and taking some time out. You certainly had a long day behind you, and it's the end of your long day, and we appreciate you taking some time out and to talk with us.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Huddling with the Pro Sports Talk with David Weinstein, featuring 5-time Super Bowl champ Pepper Johnson. We're the podcast that tackles all the controversial hot button issues from the world of sports, recognized by our guests and listeners for our hashtag No Holds Barred, Good Questions and Informed Conversation. By day, I practice criminal defense law with Hinshaw and Culbertson in Miami, Florida. But once a week, you can find me here on HWTP Radio. The show is produced and edited by Jacqueline Park and is a Sweet G Communications production. Thanks to our guest this week, Jason Brown. You can look for Jason's book, Centered, Trading Your Plans for Life That Matters, everywhere that great books are sold or downloaded. And visit Amazing Graze, GRAZE events.com, and maybe you can have your wedding on his farm. Remember, you can find a new episode of Huddling with the Pros Sports Talk every week on HWTPradio.com. Now you can follow Pepper on social media at PepJ52. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at HWTP Sports Talk. Missed a show? Visit our website at hwtpradio.com and download our podcast onto your smart device. So goodbye for now. We'll see you next week.